Okay, welcome back. It is Thursday, February 25th. I don't know where the time is flying to, but we're moving along. We left off. Let's see where we left off. We left off on kind of a cliffhanger. So at the end of the notes last time, we were talking about different types of protecting groups. And we were looking at this type of protecting group, which is the methoxymethyl ether protecting group. And I said that this was an acetal type protecting group. And we talked about acetals being two carbons, two oxygens connected to the same carbon. And we showed how to put this on, that we put it on in an SN2. That doesn't need much explanation. An SN2 reaction is fairly simple. But hydrolysis and removing it has a mechanism which is relevant to biological chemistry, which has a mechanism relevant to carbohydrate chemistry. And so I like to show this mechanism because when we get to carbohydrates, I'd rather not have this mechanism be new. I could say, hey, you've already seen this. We've already done this. It's not so bad. And so let's take a look at this mechanism of removing this type of functional group, protecting group. So we'll swap back to the new note. No, we won't, because the new note is now not there. We'll create a new one. And we're looking at methoxymethyl ether. Removal. And so the way that we look at this protecting group is that we treat it with water and acid. And it just has to be a strong acid, a non-nucleophilic acid. We're not doing dilute acid to be able to do this. And we'll show what it creates. It releases the alcohol. It makes an equivalent of formaldehyde, and it makes an equivalent of methanol, at least for the methoxymethyl ether. And these components, we said, the formaldehyde and the methanol are very easy to remove because of their very low boiling properties. It means that we can just heat this up gently and these things will evaporate off. So we want to go through this. And this thing is an acetal, so I'm going to label it as acetal hydrolysis. Because that's hydrolysis, there we go. Because that's what this mechanism actually is. And it starts off with a protonation. And so when we are acid catalyzed, the first step in an acid catalysis is to find something to protonate. In reality, we could protonate either of these hydroxyl groups. It really doesn't matter which one we choose. The mechanism, depending on which one we choose, we'll step through the mechanism a little bit differently, but eventually it comes out the same.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but what's the final product?
The final product is whatever alcohol it is that you started with. So we were protecting an alcohol. We're looking at removing the protecting group.
Gotcha.
Okay. So there's not an actual molecule just yet. We're not doing this with a specific molecule. We're doing it in general, and we are going to create an alcohol in the process. Okay, so when we protonate one side, the next step, this was just a protonation, but the next step is what's called an assisted leaving step. And this step is really the most critical. Most of the time, what people want to do is they want to treat this as a leaving group. And they say, oh, this guy is a leaving group and it should just come off and leave behind a carbocation. But that's not the way these work. The way these work is it's what's called assisted leaving. The group is pushed out by the lone pairs of the second oxygen. It's almost as if you had friends that came over and stayed for dinner, but stayed too long, and you needed to show them where the front door was. You needed like some assisted leaving to help them get out the front door. They just weren't quite ready to leave yet. And what that creates, I'll be a little bit more explicit about the hydrogens that are there, but that creates this guy. And the group that left was methanol. So there's our methanol that comes off. Now, this thing is called an oxonium ion. It is a carbonyl that also has an R group on it. And so there is no way for this R group to remove, and there's no way to alleviate this positive charge. The positive charge does have resonance. We can consider the resonance in the positive charge. That puts the positive squarely on the carbon at the base of the carbonyl. And so these two are resonance contributors. And it's easier to think mechanistically sometimes to deal with the resonance contributor with the positive charge on the on the carbon. That gets attacked by a water molecule, and we create a new oxygen-carbon bond. From this point, we have a deprotonation. So a water molecule or a conjugate base takes the proton. We'll go to a neutral molecule. I was going to draw it in a slightly different way, but I think I'll keep it oriented in this.
Are those hydrogens or I think
like these guys
above it?
Oh, on here?
Yeah.
Yes, those should have been not carbons, but they should have been hydrogens too. I should have just left them off. That would have made it simpler. And then when I drew them, then I started making a mistake. Okay, so this thing, I'm going to redraw it and say this is the same as, just to visualize this in a slightly different way, this is this guy. And so there's a CH2 that they're connected to, and I have two oxygens. One is connected to an R group, and one is connected to a hydrogen. This functional group up here was called an acetal, and it was called an acetal because each of the oxygens were connected to R groups. And so the fact that I had no hydrogens connected to the oxygens, we call this an acetal. But when the two oxygens are connected to the same carbon, one of them is an R group and one of them is a hydrogen, it's called a hemiacetal. And so the hemi part has to do with that.
Just confirming, Jason, those three lines mean that these are equivalent things. You just changed that orientation.
Right? I just changed the orientation. Yeah, I just wanted to be clear that I was just changing the orientation on you. I usually read this just as same as equals to. Okay, so once we get to the hemiacetal, then there's a protonation that occurs and the mechanism continues. I'm going to span this mechanism, looks like over a couple of pages because I'll have to split it onto the next page in a minute. The proton gets shuttled and accepted by the oxygen, which is the ether oxygen. I'll drop it down onto the next page. In that oxygen being protonated, it now creates a good leaving group on this side. And so this becomes your good leaving group. And it goes through the same assisted leaving mechanism. So the lone pairs on the hydroxyl push in, clipping the bond, and ejecting the leaving group. I'll once again show the hydrogens because that makes it a little bit easier. We have now kicked out our alcohol. And the last step is to deprotonate this guy, which is formaldehyde. And so now when everything is said and done, I have my alcohol that's been kicked out. I have formaldehyde that I generated. I have the proton reconnected to the acid. So that was a catalyst because I started with acid and I generated acid. And the other molecule that was created was methanol. So the whole thing breaks down in that way. And the important steps, like I said, are the assisted leaving steps. Anytime you have two oxygens or an oxygen and a nitrogen or two nitrogens and they're connected to the same carbon, they will demonstrate the same type of chemical reactivity where the lone pairs are competing with each other and one can push another one out if one of them becomes protonated and becomes a good leaving group. So that's the hydrolysis mechanism. It's a few steps. We've got the protonation step, nucleophilic attack, deprotonation. Then we reprotonate, create the good leaving group on the other side, assisted leaving, and then deprotonation. And those are all of our steps. So it's not an overly complicated mechanism. It's just that sometimes if you haven't seen this sort of idea or concept of assisted leaving, of two groups working together in concert in this way, then you wouldn't have considered that. Most of the time people would just treat it like an SN1 or an E1, where the group just up and leaves behind a carbocation. And that's incorrect for these types of groups. And like I said, we'll come back again. Maybe just as an aside, I can show you that most carbohydrates, when we look at sugars, the sugars contain multiple hydroxyl groups. So this is glucose. And if you look at glucose in its cyclic form like this, what you'll see is you'll see that I have two oxygens connected to the same carbon. One oxygen is got a hydrogen on it, which I was doing in red before. So if I wanted to be consistent, that's the wrong eraser. So if I wanted to be consistent, I would highlight this one in red. And the other one has the alkyl group, the R group attached to it. And so this is a hemiacetal. And the hemiacetals, the way in which they form, are exactly the reverse of the mechanism that I was just showing you. And the way that they break apart is exactly by the mechanism that I was just showing you. And so the way that hemiacetals operate and carbohydrates operate is they operate like these protecting groups. In fact, these protecting groups, the methoxymethyl ether protecting group, is derived from sugar chemistry. Its concept and its idea, its utilization is derived from observations of sugar chemistry and then applying that to synthetic organic chemistry, which is kind of cool. Also, if you take hemiacetal like this, and we look at, this was glucose. If we take a molecule of glucose and we link it together with a molecule of fructose, I have to get the stereochemistry right. I think it goes down. Nope, goes up. First one goes up, second one goes down, last one goes up. This one is equatorial, 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 and equatorial. This is sucrose or table sugar. And if you look at sucrose, it's a disaccharide rather than a monosaccharide. And this disaccharide, the linkage is an oxygen connected to the carbon, connected to an oxygen, connected to another carbon. That one is connected this way. There are two acetals. So this one is an acetal, and this one is an acetal. And when they are hydrolyzed and broken into their monomer constituents, broken into glucose and fructose, they break up exactly by this mechanism, just dealing with a lot bigger molecules. So that's why I think it's important to kind of show that mechanism. And we'll see it again when we get into carbohydrate chemistry. So just a little preview of what we'll do when we get into there. All right, protecting group wise, there's another one that is very similarly related to the methoxymethyl ether. And it's called a THP protecting group. The THP is a tetrahydrofuran. Pyran, not furan. That's where the P comes from. And this group, the way that we put this group on is we take our alcohol and we treat it with this molecule, and we use an organic acid rather than sulfuric acid. We use an acid that looks like this. It looks a lot like sulfuric acid, except it's got a carbon component on it. And it can be used without water. And it's called PTSA, peritoluyl sulfonic acid. There we go. And so we usually just abbreviate it PTSA is how we abbreviate that acid. And this one creates a protecting group that is also an acetal. It's just a bigger group. And it's not put on in an SN2 reaction. It's put on in an electrophilic addition reaction, because we use the double bond and we protonate the double bond. We can show this mechanism of how this guy gets put on. It's kind of actually nice. If we take and we protonate the double bond using the acid, the protonation leads to the formation of the cation adjacent to the oxygen. The proton goes farther away, and the reason is resonance. Once you get that bit, the alcohol comes in and does the nucleophilic attack on the carbon. A simple deprotonation, and you have the THP group. So we'll use that same symbol, same as if I were to write THPOR, and that becomes my THP group. So for all of these, when we use the protecting group, the protecting group is always abbreviated, and then the oxygen that the protecting group is connected to is always specified in the name. So you just tag the abbreviations onto the oxygen. in order to indicate that that functional group is there. This one is removed in exactly the same mechanism as what we did before. So this is formation. And then removal. Removal looks exactly, and I won't go through the whole removal mechanism again, but removal looks exactly like the mom group. It is the exact same reaction, just bigger molecule. So this is water and H2SO4. And you create, in this case, the alcohol. The carbon that is this carbon is called the acetal carbon. In sugar chemistry, we give it another name. In carbohydrate chemistry, it's called the anomeric carbon. Carbohydrates can exist as what are called anomers. And so that is the position. It's much like a stereocenter of types. And while anomers are not stereoisomers, they're a different type of isomer. That is the site where the isomerism is developed. And so we call it the anomeric carbon. The anomeric carbon or the acetal carbon, when this thing hydrates, that carbon always becomes a carbonyl. And so that carbon will become the aldehyde. The rest of the carbons, if we count them out and move through this, if we say that this is number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, number 1 becomes the aldehyde. Number 2, 3, 4, I'll take 5 over here, and then that becomes an OH. And that's the molecule that gets removed that then we would have to fish out of this reaction mixture when we were done after taking that removing group or taking that protecting group back off. There are two other protecting groups that we choose to use. One is a benzoyl, and the other is a benzyl. So this is now a third type. This is an ester type. This one is called a benzoyl. And the benzoyl is put on using a reaction called an acid chloride. So we're doing formation here. Usually you have to do a base down here as well, something like triethylamine. The reaction is fairly quick and simple with a very high yield. It makes an ester functional group. Side product is triethylamine with a proton on it. And the chloride as an anion. So this is a salt. And that salt precipitates out of the organic chemical reaction mixture. This group is what is called a benzoyl group. And we abbreviate it. It's the same as abbreviating R, O, and then we use BZ for benzoyl. benzoyl groups can be removed in two different ways. So we have options. Removal can be either base catalyzed. So if we do it under basic conditions, it is a saponification. Saponification, the word comes from soap making. Because it's exactly how we make soap. Or by hydrolysis, which is under acidic conditions. So under the two conditions, the differences are, if I do saponification, I do sodium hydroxide, it's supposed to be OH. Water and heat. And that's the first step. And then in the second step, I need to treat this with dilute H plus to reprotonate things. What that does is it splits the ester bond. And we could go through this mechanism. I don't anticipate challenging you with this mechanism right now. The acetal one is more important. It makes the alcohol and it makes an equivalent of the carboxylic acid. That's the saponification reaction, or the acid catalyzed hydrolysis. We treat it with water, H2SO4, and heat. And we also get the molecule and the carboxylic acid. Both of these are strong conditions. I mean, when we talk about treating this with sodium hydroxide and heat, we're talking about refluxing this for 3 hours or more with sodium hydroxide. We're talking about fairly strong basic conditions to break this thing apart and hydrolyze it. Under heat and acid, also, it takes a significant amount of time to degrade the ester and to break it apart. So this is a robust protecting group that is not easily broken under many conditions. It takes much stronger conditions to break this than it does to hydrolyze the acetals. The acetals are much easier to break than the ester. Because of resonance, it's not because of resonance exactly. If you look at an acetal versus an ester, the ester is much less reactive than an acetal. And partially, in a way, we can think of it like because of resonance. But what's happening here is that these two, both of these oxygens, are easy to protonate. And they work in concert to make one of them a leaving group once it's protonated. So you have that that assisted leaving step that once one of them becomes protonated, this just makes a good leaving group. You have a good leaving group, and you have assistance in pushing that group out. So that makes this easy. Low energy. These two oxygens do protonate readily. So there's no issue in protonation. However, what happens is the partial positive on this carbon is small. You accentuate it by protonating these. But nucleophilic attack by hydroxide is tough because that partial positive is small. And once you protonate these, it's still that partial positive is not very big because both oxygens contribute electron density to that carbon, stabilizing that carbon. And when we create a good leaving group, we have no good resonance to try to like help it leave. There's no assisted leaving. It just makes this group much more robust in absence of those types of factors. So it's a poor electrophile. No good leaving group. No assisted leaving. Those are the factors that make that different. Okay, and one more group, the benzyl group, a BN group rather than a BZ. Last one, fourth type. This is a benzyl rather than a benzoyl. In this one, what we have is we take the alcohol and we treat it with benzyl chloride, with triethylamine or pyridine. This is an SN2 reaction. So the group hits here, knocks this out. That forms RO, and then there is no carbonyl. It is just the aromatic ring group. And so this is called the benzyl group, and we abbreviate it to be ROBN rather than BZ. What is the advantage of the benzoyl then? Kind of just sounds like a pain. Oh, unless you're trying to do something that is fairly strenuous to other functional groups and you need to not have less concentrated acid, you need to use something, you need to do a reaction where you're going to use strong basic conditions, or you're going to do a reaction where you have strong acid conditions and you don't want to accidentally pop your MOM type protecting group or the THP protecting group. And so then you would choose to use a protecting group which is harder to take off, that can survive more strenuous conditions. So that's why I would choose to use one over the other like that. In fact, that's what I was going to do, was give a list of pluses and minuses right after we finish this, so you can kind of address which functional group do I want to use. All right. So this one is easy to put on. How do I take it off? Removal. There's only one way to remove this, and that is with catalytic hydrogenation. You have to hydrogenate it, H2 and platinum or palladium, one of the metals, and that will remove it to create the alcohol. And I think that we get toluene. I don't think it hydrogenates the benzene all the way down. I think toluene is the byproduct that comes out of that. So this can only be removed by hydrogenation, catalytic hydrogenation. Okay, so pulling it all together, all the different groups that we had. Oh, I don't want to move too fast. I was writing quick. You guys are still writing. All right, so what we have is, I need to back up and think real quick, the silicon types. We have RO, this guy. We'll do them with their abbreviation as well. So this equals RO TMS, trimethyl silyl. To put it on, we use TMSCL with triethylamine or pyridine. To take it off, we use 1-TBAF, tetrabutyl ammonium fluoride, and 2-dilute acid. Same thing for the RO silicon with the tertiary butyl group. This equals RO TBDMS. We put it on with TBDMSCL and the triethylamine. To take it off, it's TBAF and dilute acid. We also had the silicon, which has the 3 isopropyl groups on it. And this one was called TIPS, T-I-P-S. And so we put that on with TIPS CL. All of those SN2 reactions to put them on. And we take it off with TBAF. So all the silicon ones are taken off in exactly the same way. Key notes to add to this is that these two are selective for primary. That's not to say that they won't react with the secondary or tertiary. That is to say that if you have a primary that is in the molecule and you want to react with it, and there is also a secondary or tertiary, you can target the primary with this reagent. But if you want to put this on a secondary, it'll go on a secondary just fine. It'll just do it a lot slower than if it were to be put onto a primary. All right, so those are our 3 silicon types. From the silicon types, we make a bit of a break. And we look at the ether types. This one is called the MOM group. This is the RO, should put a dash in there for the bond, methoxymethyl ether. This one is put on by using, I guess we could say MOMCL. It is an SN2 reaction, much in the same way that the other ones are. You would also need a base in this that really has to be a very non-nucleophilic base. And so one of the bases that we chose to use was the diisopropyl ethylamine, which is non-nucleophilic. This one is removed under acidic conditions. And so it requires H2O and H2SO4 to remove it. The other one that is similar to this is the THP protecting group. The THP protecting group is put on using a special reagent. It is not an SN2 reaction. We use this guy and PTSA. It is removed with water and acid. So one of the things that we're seeing is that these guys are all off with TBAF. That means that all three of these, and maybe I shouldn't write that up here. That's pretty evident in that the way they are all coming off of the same reagent. What I should say is that maybe these are stable to acid, base, and hydrogenation. They only come off with TBAF. These mom-protecting groups, these are stable to TBAF and to hydrogenation and base. Let's put base and then hydrogenation because it'll fit better. So when I say stable too, that means they're unaffected by TBAF, they're unaffected by base, they're unaffected by hydrogenation. They're acid labile. That's the other way to put it. Acid labile means that they come off with acid. These guys up here, these are TBAF labile. They come off with TBAF, with fluoride.
So was that solvent that you used, that was a non-nucleophilic base, was that just for the sake of dissolving the acid? Yeah.
This is going to be a sacrificial. There would also be a solvent included in this that I have not given you. I'm only giving you the reagents. I'm not giving you the solvent. The amine that is in this is being used in place of triethylamine because triethylamine is still too nucleophilic and will react with this guy because it's too small a molecule, not enough sterics. And so the amine would actually displace the chloride, which would be unfortunate and bad. This guy has so much sterics on it that it won't do that. So this base will only pull a proton and will not act in a nucleophilic nature.
Okay.
All right, we have a split again, and we go to the benzoyl group. So this is our ester type. This equals ROBZ. It gets put on. It's not an SN2 reaction, but it's not dissimilar. It uses an acid chloride and it uses like triethylamine or pyridine. It uses a non-nucleophilic base again. Triethylamine is always sort of a go-to one. To remove it requires either water and water and H2SO4 and reflux, or sodium hydroxide, water, reflux as one, and then two, we come back and we hit it with dilute acid. So this can be removed with acid or base, but is stable to hydrogenation and stable to TBAF. And then the last one is the benzol rather than benzoyl, ROBN. This one is put on in an SN2 reaction. We do need to use a base. It's removed with hydrogenation platinum and hydrogen. This one is stable to TBAF, acid, base, everything except hydrogenation. I think I was just writing the word acid. Let's just write it out. Acid, base, it's stable to all of those. So that's your whole table of protecting groups. Why I would choose different protecting groups, or why do I have so many? Simply for choices. It depends on the molecule and it depends on what you're doing. Sometimes we have a molecule that has more than one hydroxyl group. We were talking about diols. When you have a diol, sometimes you want to function on one alcohol and not on the other. This allows us to be able to go through and select a primary or a less substituted alcohol over a more substituted one. Once we do that, we can put a different protecting group on the second one. We can remove the first protecting group and do something to that molecule, or we could not put the second protecting group on and do something to the alcohol that wasn't protected. And so now all of a sudden we have choices in the way that we do things, in the way that we can go through and select a molecule to work on. So let's maybe time check. 1, 3, 2, I want to see. I do want to try to make it through this chapter today. And that'll be tight given the number of pages I need to go. I don't normally do a recap like this, but I think this recap was helpful. I think that's why I went a little bit longer than I anticipated.
It was helpful.
Good. I was going to show an example real quick. Let's say that we have a molecule like this, and we take and treat it with Br2 and light. We brominate it, and we brominate it in the tertiary position. As expected, there's no surprises in this molecule. We take it and we react it with potassium tert butoxide and tertiary butanol. Nope, wrong base. Take it back. I apologize. I want a small base. Sodium ethoxide and ethanol. We get a little bit of heat. So we do the E2 elimination rather than getting the less substituted. I wanted the more substituted. And now I'll treat it and I'll do ozonolysis. And I'll do reductive zinc and water. So now what I do is I split this bond. Each one of those becomes carbonyls. I'll number out my carbons to make it easier to track where everything is. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. So now I have a linear molecule with 7 carbons. Same as, I'll draw it out. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'll take and I'll reduce the entire molecule using sodium borohydride. And we'll do that in methanol. That won't require a second protonation step. And we will count our carbons again just to make sure. Now that I've done that, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have a secondary alcohol and I have a primary alcohol. what I'll do is I'll take and use TBDMSCl, and I'll do that with triethylamine. That's going to selectively protect the primary alcohol. So I'll get OTBDMS. The other alcohol is unchanged. I'll convert the second alcohol into a good leaving group. So maybe what I do now is I take and treat it with trying to decide whether I want to make a tosylate. I'm going to make a tosylate because you guys haven't seen a whole lot of that. So let's do tosyl chloride in pyridine. That tosyl chloride looks like this. And when it adds, it's going to make an oxygen bond to the sulfur, ejecting out the chloride. And those types of groups are really good leaving groups. So I've set it up, OTS. So TS here is not a protecting group, it's a leaving group. So I want to differentiate between a really good leaving group and something that is not a leaving group. This is a protecting group, not a leaving group. Structurally, maybe it's important to show why one is protecting and why one is not. Protecting, but makes it into a leaving group. So let me draw this molecule structurally so that we understand the difference. One is connected to a silicon that has a tertiary butyl dimethyl silyl group. The other one is connected to a sulfur . Now, if this oxygen leaves, it leaves with a negative charge. That negative charge can delocalize and resonate into each of the three oxygens. That makes this a super stable group when it comes off because of all the delocalization of the negative charge. That's what makes it into a good leaving group. If this were to come off, it comes off as an O minus, and silicon is not an electron withdrawing group. Silicon is an electron donating group. Silicon actually pushes electron density towards the oxygen, making it less stable, making it less likely to come off. And so that's why, even though these are abbreviations and you think, oh, I got two leaving groups, what am I going to do here? Let's go for the primary. No, wrong. It's not a leaving group at all. Its electronics are not appropriate to a leaving group. They actually dissuade it from leaving. And that's why it's a good protecting group as opposed to a leaving group. Okay, the next reaction that I want to do with this then is I would selectively do something out here on this side. I was going to try to get fancy and I don't know what I want to do with it. I could eliminate it. I could eliminate it internally. Maybe that's what I want to do. Maybe what I want to do is I want to go for a small base again, sodium ethoxide. And in ethanol and heat. So we do an E2 reaction. That E2 reaction would favor the formation of a trans double bond. I might then seek to make an epoxide out of this with MCPBA. I'm creating a stereocenter here. And so it's going to become plus minus because it could come from both the top and the bottom. I'll go back to abbreviating this as TBDMS, and then maybe I remove the protecting group. One, TBAF, two, dilute acid, and then we'll call it quits. And I've just sort of shown how I can work on one side of the molecule. Without touching the other side. And so if you were given this, and I mean, I just want to highlight what we just did. What we just did was a process using protecting groups that allowed us to go from this molecule to this guy. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, OH. And if I had asked you how to do that, you guys would all freaked out. But it's actually not so bad in retrospect when you look at it, just the sequence of steps that need to happen. And how I get from point A to point B, and this idea of using protection and deprotection strategies. Okay, so that's one example. I've got a bunch of problems. Oh God, I got the best thing for you guys. You're not entirely ready for it. Where am I hiding it? Let me find it and I'll screen share it and show you, and then I'll put it up on Canvas for you. It is in Chem 12, Fall. Hang on. It's hiding from me. Okay, I got it. It was not in my study guides, it was in my stop screen share. That. Okay, this is a exam one study guide that I'll put out here fairly shortly. And we haven't done the oxidations yet, and that's why I haven't done it just yet. It goes through the major concepts of carbon-carbon bond making using alkynyl anions and Grignards, ways of doing oxidations of carbonyls to form carbonyls, how to reduce carbonyls into alcohols, the free radical reactions, enol tautomerizations, radical resonance, regioselectivity, how to use these different reagents in terms of reagents that are regioselective. The protecting groups are all, well, some of them are on here, not all the protecting groups are on here, but what it does is it goes through pattern recognition. It talks about, what do I do if I want to put on one carbon? Think of this breaking this up and then the synthons that would result. And then how do I put it back together? Use something like a Grignard or an alkyl lithium with a one carbon electrophile. If I want to put on one carbon with an oxygen, here's how you do it. If you want to put on one carbon to get a carbonyl, here's how you do it. If you want to put on one carbon to make a carboxylic acid, here's how you do it. If you want to make it into an ether with one carbon, here's how you do it. This is the retrosynthesis, the synthons, and then all of the reactions that come from those synthon ideas. And then from here, What if I want to put two carbons on? So if I want to put two carbons on, how do I do that pattern? What if I want two carbons where the oxygen is on carbon one and I want an alcohol? What if I want to turn that alcohol into an ether or a ketone, or two carbons with an alcohol where it's on carbon number two instead of number one, or make that into an ether or an aldehyde or a carboxylic acid? All of those patterns are here. We break them down into what are called 1-2 patterns, or a 1-2 pattern this way, the synthons and all of the reagents that they result from. What about three carbons? All the three carbon patterns and all the ways to do these, which include Grignard's reacting with esters and all of those patterns. And then I boil it down for you. This is basically what it comes down to, is looking at the patterns of how these things go together and how they disconnect and form. But it doesn't stop there. You also get this great set of steak knives. There's like the next set here of things that come with it. There's all these examples to try. So I give you an example problem here. I show you how to map it. I show you how to disconnect it. I show you how to take it back to the synthons. And then I give you the best answer of how to put it back together. And then all of these go by the same process. So they give you that redundancy in practice on new problems that use the same skill set and how to take it back. And then the answers are upside down to challenge you to not look at them. Next pattern, I give you a new pattern, show you how to do it, give you the best answer. And then I give you a bunch of examples to try it on. And so there's some other key things here and helpful things that I throw in. There's your Ginzu set of steak knives that come after it. But this is basically your study guide for exam one that will help you to go through and actually give you practice as well as things to study and look at and bringing everything together. All right, so I'll get that up on Canvas and I'll send that out to everybody so that you have that. Like I said, we haven't covered these oxidations yet. That was part of what I wanted to do today. I've got 10 more minutes. And I can't cover all of that in 10 minutes, so I'm going to be reasonable in what I cover. You guys all still with me? We're still good? Okay, cool. Nope, that did not work. What did I just share? I didn't share anything because I didn't select anything to share. When it starts getting overwhelming, or when it can start seeming overwhelming, I like to break out some of the things to say, all right, hang on, I've got you covered. It's not quite as overwhelming as you think it might be. That we have, there's some things here to help you that are coming down the line. So don't be too overwhelmed with it yet. This is part two of this chapter. So I break this chapter sort of into two parts. We just looked at protecting groups and we looked at the formation of diols. This part starts to go into oxidation types of patterns. And so there's a couple of reactions here that, yeah, that was just part one. I know, Keegan, sorry. There's some reaction patterns that are here that are helpful. Conversion of alcohols into other functional groups. So some of these are reactions that we expect and have seen. Like if I treat this with HBr, I can do an SN1 reaction and I can convert it into the bromide. So this is just review, which is why I'm just gonna go a little quickly through some of these. I can take a primary alcohol and I can treat it with HBr. And I can do an SN2 reaction. And I can replace it with a bromide. Or I could take that primary alcohol and I can treat it with HCl. And here we tend to use a zinc catalyst. This is also SN2. And I can convert it into a chloride. Another example is to take an alcohol and to convert it into its tosyl, tosylate. And then from there, now you've converted it into a good leaving group. Now we could use something like sodium X, like a halogen, and water. And we can do an SN2 this way. And because it's an SN2, it reverses the stereochemistry at the center. So all of these things you've seen before. You've seen SN1 reactions. You've seen inherent SN2 reactions. So these are all sort of review. What you probably haven't seen is you haven't seen these two reactions where we take an alcohol and we treat it with a reagent that's called thionyl chloride. It's SOCl2. It's done with a base pyridine and it converts the alcohol into the chloride. It's another way of getting a chloride. Or we can take that alcohol and we can treat it with another reagent, PBr3, phosphorus tribromide. This takes and converts the alcohol into the bromide. These two are more common to see than the SN2 reactions or the SN1 reactions. They're more reliable. You just didn't have the knowledge to understand how these reactions actually work before. And so now we can take a look at it. Let me take the thionyl chloride reaction, for example, and show you how it works and show you the mechanism of the thionyl chloride. Actually, no, not in this case, because this reagent both converts the alcohol. Sorry, the question Keegan asked, wouldn't you have to improve the hydroxyl, meaning convert the hydroxyl into a leaving group before substituting with a bromide? The phosphorus and the sulfur both provide the nucleophile and convert the alcohol into a good leaving group. They do it simultaneously. It's an all-in-one conversion, which is really nice. So Keegan, your answer, your question is an astute question, a correct question. And the answer to it is yes, we do need to convert it into a good leaving group, but the reagent does it all in-house. So it's an all-in-one solution. So let me show just this mechanism real quick of the alcohol reacting with thionyl chloride. Except I'm drawing it wrong. Thionyl chloride has two chlorines on it, and the sulfur has a lone pair. So it's tetrahedral, or I should say trigonal pyramidal with the lone pair on it. The sulfur, based on these electron withdrawing groups of the chlorine and the oxygen, the sulfur has a great partial positive, and it is attacked by the alcohol. And opens up to be pentavalent. Remember that sulfur is one of those elements that's in period 3 and can extend its octets to be able to go to 10, 12, 14 electron exceptions. And so we've gone to a 10 electron exception and sulfur can accommodate that because of its d orbitals. It follows that pattern of carbonyl chemistry where the carbonyl closes back up and ejects out a leaving group. But this time the chlorine is the leaving group. The role of the pyridine base. the base's job is to now pull this proton. And so pyridine is an aromatic amine. It pulls that proton, giving the electrons back to the oxygen. And now the next thing that winds up happening is the chloride that we ejected acts as a nucleophile, comes in and does an SN2 reaction, because now we've converted the oxygen into a good leaving group. And as you convert it, the bond here breaks. These electrons go to make a double bond with the sulfur, and the sulfur kicks out a leaving group of another chlorine. I left off my lone pairs. I'm going to keep my lone pairs there. And so what happens is this thing decomposes, falls apart, makes my new chlorine bond, makes sulfur dioxide, which is a gas. That leaves the reaction vessel. And the other thing that we get out of this is we get the pyridinium chloride. And that's a salt, a solid that precipitates down. So basically, after running this reaction, we get one thing that decomposes to a gas and comes off, and the other thing that precipitates out of solution, you simply filter this and you're done. Super sweet reaction, actually, in the way that all of this goes together. So that's in part why these reactions are preferred, is because these reactions proceed in a manner that give high yields by Le Chatelier's principle. When you remove reagents, you move a reaction towards its conclusion, towards its product formation, and super easy isolation and fairly facile reaction. The PBr3 works similarly. However, it does not create a gas that comes off. It just creates a salt that precipitates out. But essentially, the oxygen binds to the phosphorus. A bromide is kicked out. A bromide does an SN2 reaction. The oxygen leaves with the phosphorus, making a phosphate, which then becomes insoluble and precipitates out of solution. And it does essentially the same sort of reaction with the bromide. So very, very cool types of reactions. So this is how we can convert alcohols into bromides or chlorides. There are only a couple of other reactions that I would say that are review that you have had that I could do fairly fast before we get into oxidations, and then just leave oxidations for the last thing that we do. And we'll do oxidations on Tuesday when we come back. But there's a couple of E1 reactions that you guys did. You could use H2SO4 and heat. And you could do an E1 reaction. You could take alcohols and similarly do H2SO4 and heat. You would get a mixture of products here. So we would get that elimination. And that elimination. Or you can choose to control it by E2, by first making it into a good leaving group, tosyl chloride and pyridine, convert it into a good leaving group, and then pull it with a bulky base or a small base, potassium O-tert butoxide, to get that. Actually, small base or big base would make a difference here, because there's only one way to eliminate. So this then would be an E2 reaction, and we can get more control over the E2 reactions. So you're seeing that SN1s, SN2s, E1s, E2s, and a couple of new ways of converting the alcohols into halogens that give us a great amount of synthetic utility for the alcohols. We can convert them into all different types of functional groups. And when we come back on Tuesday, what we'll pick up and do is we'll pick up and we'll look at the oxidations. And there's a couple of different oxidizing reagents, but basically what we're looking at doing is we're looking at ways of taking alcohols to their aldehydes, or ways of looking and taking alcohols that maybe are secondary into their ketones, and looking at oxidation techniques and how we do that. And we'll look at the reaction mechanisms and where those go from there. And that'll just give us even more stuff. Okay, what chapter can we practice these without running into oxidations? JC, you can practice stuff. What I would say is, what I would do is I would do the mono skills within the textbook. Don't do the synthesis problems in the textbook. Do the ones where they're asking you for single transformations, or where they're giving you reaction schemes that aren't using oxidations, and just stay away from the oxidations for the moment, but go ahead and practice the other stuff. It's kind of hard for me. Most of the other problems that I'm going to give you are eventually going to have oxidations in them. So I don't have them separated with oxidations and without oxidations. So what I would do is take a look at the in-chapter problems. Maybe that's the better way to say it. Go through the textbook and pull the in-chapter problems just before you get to the oxidation component within the chapter. All of the problems that precede that should be safe and free of oxidations. And that would be a good place to go, a good place to start. Then you know for sure you're not running into it. All right, once again, I'm 3 minutes over time. I'm gonna let you guys run, but I'll stay on the line if anybody wants to ask any questions. And I'm happy to chat for a little bit. And other than that, you guys have a good and safe weekend, and I'll catch up with you next week. Thanks, everyone.